Hi, I'm John Weber. My guest today is bassist and composer Linda Oh. Born in Malaysia to Chinese parents, she moved to Western Australia, where she cut her teeth playing bass in rock bands. Since discovering the double bass, she's continued to collect awards and accolades. She won a 2008 ASCAP Young Composers Award, an honorable mention at the 2009 Thelonious Monk Competition. Today, she's a fixture in the New York scene and teaches at the Manhattan School of Music Pre-College and composes for film. I'm excited to hear what she'll bring to the show today. Linda, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I know you started music when you were about 4 years old, but please tell me it wasn't upright bass. What instrument did you start on?
I started playing classical piano when I was 4 years old. And from there, I transitioned through the clarinet and then to the bassoon in high school. And I took that pretty seriously through high school.
When did bass enter into the picture?
Basically, I was playing just for fun electric bass in the school jazz bands and in rock bands in high school. And eventually, I wanted to take it more seriously. And in college, that's when I actually switched to the upright bass, yeah.
But as a teenager, let me ask you this first. As when you were playing electric bass, what was on your iPad at the time? Or I guess maybe in those days, it was probably a Walkman, right?
Yeah. Discman, Walkman, yeah. I was listening to a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers, Led Zeppelin for sure, all sorts of things. My sister, my older sister, had a great music collection as well. So she had a lot of world music, Cuban music. And it was everything from John Zorn to... I don't know, to Tool, and so that really opened my eyes up, and I had a very diverse musical upbringing because of her, I think.
In Perth, Australia, of all places, it seems so, like the other side of the world. It's so far away.
Yeah, geographically it's the most isolated city, but yeah, it's got a happening scene there and some really great musicians there.
And when were you first exposed to American jazz over there?
I had CDs, I had Miles Davis, I had a lot of Jaco Pastorius at the time. But we did have some acts come through Perth. We had the Migas Big Band come through, Gary Bartz would come and visit a lot, Kurt Elling came. So every once in a while there would be a prominent performer who would come and visit.
Wow. And you started gigging at about what age? And I would imagine electric bass first, right?
Yeah, electric bass was probably around like 14, 15.
Wow.
Just doing like really small rock gigs, you know, for no money. And I was subbing in the army band as well.
The army jazz band?
Yeah, yep. There's an army jazz band in Perth, yeah.
That's pretty impressive. So you could read at that level that you could walk into that gig.
I think that was my strength at the time. I mean, being classically trained, it was easier for me to sight read and to play transcriptions rather than, I guess, improvise straight away, you know. And I think like a lot of kids growing up, especially now within the jazz education system, a lot of them start like that. Like in Australia, definitely kids start off reading jazz first before they actually start listening to it and transcribing and listening by ear, you know, so it's a different thing. Yeah.
And you said that you also studied bassoon fairly seriously in high school as well, while you were doing the rock bands and doing all the fun stuff.
Yeah, I was playing in the school orchestra a lot, and I would play in the WA Youth Jazz Orchestra on bassoon, actually, because they had a woodwind section, so that was cool as well to hear the jazz musicians at a college and professional level in the same band, you know.
So you were a high school kid playing at the college level already?
Well, it was basically a youth jazz orchestra that incorporated mostly college students. And yeah, they needed string players and woodwind players to augment the big band. So I was lucky, yeah.
You play so beautifully. I would love to get into the music right away with you if I could.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you think? Maybe we could do a nice jazz tune. Think of a monk tune, any monk tune.
Yeah, Panonica. Do you know Panonica?
You might have to help me with the bridge, but I'd be delighted.
Okay, I'll yeah.
Let's do it.
1, 2, and 1, 2, 3. Thank you.
Wow, you played upright bass with such finesse and authority. That was beautiful. Fantastic playing. And you know the whole melody on top of that.
Yeah.
I have such great appreciation for what the bass players do. And do you think there's an advantage to leading the band from the bass chair as you do?
Yeah, I think it's different. I think it's very different as opposed to being a horn player or a piano player. I feel like bass has a strong role and you can really change things. You have a lot more power than you may think, you know. And yeah, I think in some ways to shape the music and even the dynamic of the music as a bass player. But sometimes I do talk to drummers about this. Sometimes it's hard to necessarily control what happens on the top end of things, you know, like in the melodies and you almost need a really strong sense of trust with the musicians that you're playing with for them to play your music, because obviously we're not the ones in control of the melody and what goes on in that department, you know. And I've played a lot of gigs with drummers who have been leaders, who have written a lot of really great but complex music, and it can be tricky sometimes, you know, if there's not that trust with the horn players.
That's a really good point, you know, and you're also responsible for the foundation of the root of every single chord that gets played, the pulse, the groove. Mm. It's all up to you. And you do have a lot of power as the bass player, as it turns out.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Mm.
And, I mean, I think about other famous bass player composer leaders such as, you know, Charles Mingus.
Mm, yeah.
Tell me some of the bass players who you admired when you were starting to play upright bass in college.
Yeah, definitely Charles Mingus, Ray Brown, Dave Holland was a big influence on me, you know. The thing in common with the three of them for me is just the amount of authority that they played with. And Charles Mingus was a big influence because of his somewhat fearlessness with the music.
Yeah, I mean, he was the kind of guy, really, you had to respect him. Mm. Like you're doing right now. You're carrying the entire ensemble on your shoulders, even though it's just the two of us. Mm. Really, you are the foundation of our music right here. I got to listen to you and I got to follow you because your time is so good, for starters.
Thank you.
And you play the monk very, very well. And you were in a Thelonious Monk competition.
Yeah, yep. That was, I think it was in 2009. Yeah, it's a good experience. I mean, competition's always a bit funny when you think of it in music or in any art form, really, you know, because at the end of the day, what is a competition, you know, and how do you gauge who wins it? But it was a great experience, especially to play for so many people that I admire. I mean, the people on the panel were basically it for me, you know, like Christian McBride, Charlie Hayden, Bob Hurst. The list was endless, you know. It's pretty daunting to play in front of all your heroes in one go, yeah. It was definitely an honor just to be there.
They all know your name now and they all know what you can do. So I'd like to play another tune. I'd like to get right back into the music. I really, really just dig in your playing a lot. And maybe we could do a standard. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's play this tune, All or Nothing at All, yeah.
I love that. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Glorious. I love everything you're doing.
Thanks.
Now, you must have had, I'm going to guess, some very good-natured mentors, both in Perth, where you began your studies, and also when you came to the United States as a college student. Tell me about some of the people that you looked up to.
Yeah, I had a few people. I had some bass teachers who were great. This bass teacher, Paul Pooley, was a big mentor of mine, and also a composition lecturer, Graham Lyle, who, for me and many others in Perth and in Melbourne, attribute a lot of their learning and success to him. So I owe them a lot, I think. As well as when I was 19, I was lucky enough to be a part of the Sisters in Jazz IAJE program, and that introduced me to basically Rini Rasnes, and Rini Rasnes introduced me to people who really made a difference for me, Todd Coleman in particular.
So you heard Rini Rasnes playing with Todd Coleman in Perth when you were 19 or 20 or something in college?
Actually, Rini was a mentor at the Sisters in Jazz IAJE
yes.
program, and
yes.
she told me exactly what I needed to do and what I needed to work on, and it was really refreshing too. I mean, not that people around me didn't do that as well, but like for Rini to actually hone in on certain things at the time was really great, you know, especially when you're a part of something like that. And it's a big deal, you know, to get to have a free trip to New York, you know, and to have someone really tell you, you know, nope, you need to work on this, you need to make sure that this is together. And it was really great, yeah.
Was reading helping you with composition at that point, or just rhythm section playing?
Everything, pretty much. We all brought in tunes to play with the combo, and you know, a lot of it was to do with that. A lot of it was just to do with ensemble playing and time and stylistic things that I wasn't really aware of. And I think as a bass player, you really need to be aware of different stylistic nuances. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I like that. I would like to play one of your compositions, because you do write quite a bit.
Yeah, the tune we'll play is a tune called Number One Hit Pop Rock New Age Album, and it's off my 2012 release called Initial Here.
Awesome, let's play it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, that's an absolutely terrific tune. I love playing on that.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
I think it deserves to be a number one hit.
Yeah, I wrote that song a while ago. It was after my first album came out. The first album that I did, it's called Entry. It's a trumpet trio album, and surprisingly did well in a lot of Daniel polls in downbeat and that kind of thing. And I thought it was funny to me because it was something I didn't really expect. It's funny the correlation between a musician and what their purpose is, and then the whole business side of things, like what deserves downbeat this, downbeat that, or you know, all about jazz critics this, and you know, it's just an interesting concept to me, and I think every artist goes through that.
Yeah, I mean, jazz and popular music are two completely different things, and it's kind of funny to call a jazz thing a number one hit because, I mean,
yeah, in terms of mainstream music, it's different, you know. And that's not to say that there aren't some jazz musicians who are really branching out there and really reaching the wider audiences, which is, I think, it's a great thing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love that album. I thought it was a terrific album. I love the cover, as a matter of fact. That was really something. I remember there was sort of a cartoon of you.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine drew that, yeah. She's very talented.
You looked
yeah.
like a superhero or something with your bass. Yeah. With a really interesting skyline. I think there was the Petronas Towers and the Brooklyn Bridge and some other things in the background.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Well, there's more coming up with bassist Linda Oh. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR Music. You know, I'd love to hear about some of your composing when you were a student at the Manhattan School. You wrote very prodigiously for all different kinds of ensembles, and I'd love to hear you talk about maybe one of your pieces.
Yeah. At Manhattan School, I had quite a few different composition teachers. You know, I had Mike Patterson, who was teaching me more about orchestration. We were studying a lot of Ludmilla Eulalia's works at Manhattan School of Music with Dave Liebman and Phil Markowitz. I think it's important sometimes to be in that environment that pushes you to keep writing, especially giving yourself some sort of restrictions. I think it's a great composition exercise, you know, to see what you can come up with. One of my tunes I wrote called The Upside uses predominantly parallel minors and major chords, and it was one of those tunes that I kind of had to write for a combo, you know, but the upside of it was that I came up with something that I actually thought sounded good that wasn't just simply an exercise, you know. And I think that's the ultimate goal, is trying to see what you can create, trying to be true to yourself while giving yourself these restrictions, you know. And so this tune, The Upside, is on a 2013 release. It's a result of this jazz gallery residency program I was happy to be a part of. We recorded this in April 2012 live at the Jazz Gallery, and it features a jazz quartet with Greg Ward on sax, Ted Poor on drums, Sam Harris on piano, as well as the Sirius String Quartet.
Wow. I have heard your string writing, and it's very, very beautiful. It's really incredible.
Thank you.
Cinematic in quality.
Oh, thanks.
I would love to play The Upside. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, let's do it.
One, two, three, one. Thank you.
That's a really beautiful tune, Upside. I love it.
Thank you. Thanks.
And I can always find where I am just by listening to you. You're a good anchor.
Yeah. Okay.
You started out on electric bass, and you never really forgot what it was to be an electric bass player because it's two completely different disciplines, upright bass and electric bass. Tell me about that. How do you maintain your electric bass roots?
I'm not really sure. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it is all music, and you can express yourself through all mediums, I think, you know. And I like to embrace all my influences, you know, and stay true to them, kind of, you know. And kind of the release from classical music during my high school period was rock music, and I had this band with some friends of mine in high school. It was called Idée Fixe, not like IDEE, not French like Idée Fixe, but it was based on that, and it was spelt EDAYFIX, you know. And we had original songs, and we played some covers like Metallica and stuff, but yeah, we really got into writing our own songs and stuff. And it never went further than that. But from there, you know, Australia, particularly Perth, has a very strong rock scene, particularly pub rock scene. So I played in a lot of bands during that time. And, you know, it's just good experience, I think, to be just playing solid groove. And some of the bass lines in a lot of my favorite rock bands, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Led Zeppelin, you know, they're incredible, incredible bass lines that are just so well crafted, yeah.
We should do one of them.
Yeah, I'll be down.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Something by the Red Hot Chili Peppers? What do you like?
Yeah, there was a tune off my first album entry, and it was the tune Soul to Squeeze. It was a B-side of Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
That's an awesome bass line by Flea, right? Let's do that. It's a very, very inventive take on that tune, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
It's a good idea. I think you stayed true to your roots, your electric bass roots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What would you want to tell people who play electric bass right now who maybe are thinking about taking upright bass and think they're going to lose what they have? They're not going to be able to play rock or groove on an upright bass.
I mean, I think there are a lot of really great bands out there who are kind of melding the two, and a lot of great musicians who come from a rock aesthetic, you know, and who write really great music. You know, The Bad Plus is doing some great things, some other lesser-known bands. There's even a rock band who are all jazz musicians or came from a jazz sensibility. They're called Cuddle Magic. They're one of my favorite rock bands right now, and a lot of jazz musicians know about them because most of those musicians went to New England Conservatory. But that's a classic example of jazz musicians who are also taking their the rock roots quite seriously, and that's a great band. A lot of players like Mark Juliana, you know, a lot of great musicians out there. Tim LaFave, really kind of melding that rock thing with jazz and improvisation. Yeah.
That's pretty much happened throughout the history of jazz. Even Miles Davis was embracing all the rock and roll stuff as late as the 1980s.
Yeah,
so it probably happened. There's been parallels all the way along the history of jazz where they embrace the more radical music of the day, the rock, the stuff that nobody would expect the jazzers to embrace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want to ask you about how you met trumpeter composer bandleader Dave Douglas. And maybe tell me how your experience with as a side person with him shaped your development.
I went to the Banff Center 1 year in 2007, actually. It was a program for creative music and improvisation. And Dave was the director, and we got to play a lot of original music, and there were some really amazing guest artists. And it was such a great experience. Everyone should at some point go up to Banff and just chill out, be out in the mountains and create. And the second time was also in kind of an educational setting. It was at the Carnegie Hall, I think it's the Viol or Wild Program for Professional Development.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was a composition program as well. And, you know, we developed a good relationship. I sent him stuff that I was working on, and we started talking a bit more. And eventually he asked me to be on a release. I think it's called Orange Afternoons. And it was a great experience. Marcus Gilmore played, Ravi Coltrane and Vijay Iyer. And since then, we've been doing a lot of his new quintet stuff, as well as a group co-led by him and Joe Lovano called Soundprints. Yeah.
And Joey Barron's in that band playing drums.
Uh-huh.
I saw some of that video. That was beautiful. You played some great solos on there.
Oh,
you're good. You're a nice fit for that band.
Oh, thanks. It's a lot of fun.
And what about Joey Barron? Has he been a big influence in your life?
Yeah, definitely. It's been so great playing with him, definitely in the Soundprints band. You know, we always go to soundchecks early, and playing duo with Joey before each gig has been really great, you know, and he's hit me to a lot of great music as well. Yeah, he's a great positive energy, I think.
Yeah, I saw him doing some hand percussion with you. It was just bass solo, and he switched to put his drumsticks down and played with his hands. And you two locked so well. It was beautiful to watch and listen to.
Oh, cool. Nice.
I would love to play another composition of yours if I could.
Yeah,
if you'll
sure.
Let me. What do you think? There's one here called Deeper Than Happy. I want to know what that means, first of all.
Yeah, I wrote that for my little niece. She's 3 years old now, but at the time, my sister sent me a really cute video of her completely ecstatic watching a character of hers on TV. And she's such a beautiful soul. She's incredibly empathetic, and she's got such a strong sense of right and wrong. Yeah, so I wrote this for her.
Well, I'd sure love to play it. Deeper Than Happy.
I want to do.
Thank you. That's such a fun tune.
Oh, cool, thanks.
I love it. Very playful. So it's just about your niece watching a cartoon.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And the stops and goes, just sort of like you're scoring a film?
Yeah.
Because God knows I've scored enough cartoony commercials in my day, back in my jingle days. But your film writing is actually very serious, and I would love to know more about that and how you got into it.
Yeah, I mean, I've dabbled in it pretty much. I've done some while I was in college. I did one by a great director who was a film student at Columbia University, and it was an interesting story. It was basically a very short film about the comfort women in Korea during World War II. So that was kind of intense, you know, to write for that. But I was also lucky enough to be a part of this BMI film composing workshop led by Rick Bates. And that was really awesome to be given some great assignments and also to talk to some film composers as well. It's something I want to do more. It's hard to kind of juggle that with traveling and being a sideman. But my brother-in-law is actually living in rural Australia right now. He mentors young Indigenous kids. And he's actually working on small films and a larger project about some of those kids. So once that's done, it'll be good to put some music to it and see what the final product is, yeah.
What are you thinking about doing? What kind of score?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it's more documentation pretty much. It's not really anything like a fictional story or anything like that. So I don't know. We'll see. It might just need little things here and there.
Well, congratulations to you for doing that. That's a really very ambitious undertaking, writing for film.
Mm.
And I cannot believe that this entire hour has gone by, because I think we are already at that place where we're going to introduce our final number for the show. And I'm trying to even think of a good, nice burn and swing thing. I like doing that swing with you. You do that so well. Maybe we should do another.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do Just in Time.
I love it. From Bells Are Ringing, 1956. That was so much fun. Linda, you're a fantastic guest. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a pleasure being here, yeah.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with John Weber and his guest, Linda Oh. This program is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hirsch Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Freeman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson, Production assistant, Laura Hunsberger. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, director and executive producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.